we should start. Thanks for all your cooperation in shifting rooms. On behalf of the Department of English and Comparative Literary Studies, I would like to extend a very warm welcome to all of you to the 8th annual Edward Said Memorial Lecture. The lecture series was set up in 2004 to honor the distinguished scholar and academic Edward Said, Professor of Comparative Literature at Columbia University in the United States. Besides being a writer and scholar of considerable erudition, whose work embraced a wide range of subjects that included Western classical music, philosophy, art, literary theory, and world politics, Edward Said was also a fiery advocate for Palestine and an important public intellectual, albeit one who more often than not occupied a quite lonely position as a critic of US foreign policy in the Middle East. In establishing the lecture series, the English department seeks to draw special attention to Edward Said's contribution to literary criticism, something that for Said was not just a profession, but a vocation that was linked very deeply to political engagement in the public sphere. In Said's own words, his work was an attempt to make visible the real affiliations that exist between the world of ideas and scholarship on the one hand and the world of brute politics, corporate and state power, and military force on the other. In Britain and elsewhere, as we face the rapid speed at which higher education is being corporatized and privatized and the humanities undermined in a bid to deepen the power of technocrats and managers, Said's words continue to offer a powerful reminder of the task at hand. The University of Warwick was, of course, not a stranger to Said. Besides knowing the work of individual scholars such as Benita Parry, who's tonight's distinguished speaker, Said visited Warwick in 1994 when the English and Philosophy departments organized an international conference on his work. And in 2001, he received an honorary degree from Warwick. Before I close my introduction to the event, I would like to convey a very special thank you to Dr. Saoirse Gunn for her help in organizing today's lecture. Thank you, Saoirse, as well as all our colleagues and students in the English department who continue to support this series with enthusiasm. It is now my great pleasure and honor to invite my colleague, Professor Neil Lazarus, a longtime interlocutor, friend, colleague, comrade of Benita's, and if I could just add also, co-founder of the Benita Parry Neil Lazarus School of Marxist Postcolonial Criticism, which I just made up, to introduce Benita this evening. Thank you.
It's a particular privilege for me to be able to introduce Benita Parry to you this evening. A good place to start might be with the acknowledgements to my recent book, The Postcolonial Unconscious, in which I wrote as follows. I'm deeply indebted to friends and colleagues with whom I've spent many hours in discussion about postcolonial studies, literature, cultural theory and politics. I've learned a very great deal from these conversations, which I have treasured also for the fellowship and intellectual solidarity they have offered. For 20 years now, Benita Parry has been so valued and close an interlocutor of mine that she stands as prima inter pares in this regard. I first met Benita at a symposium on colonial discourse and postcolonial theory at Essex University in 1991. By that stage, I'd already been reading her work with growing admiration for 15 years or so, ever since Peter Hume suggested to me when I was still an MA student at Essex that I take a look at a book called Delusions and Discoveries, Studies on India in the British Imagination, 1880 to 1930, that had been published 5 or 6 years before, in 1972. When Conrad and Imperialism appeared in 1980, I read it in one sitting. It gave me courage that I needed that year when I was finding it quite hard to complete my own doctoral thesis on African literature. published before the emergence of the disciplinary subfields of colonial discourse theory and post-colonial studies, these books of Benita's represent splendid examples of engaged and discriminating scholarship. Delusions is a pioneering study of Anglo-Indian literary culture, surveying diaries, letters, fiction, journalistic and policy writing. It offers a nuanced reading of the scope of British colonial ideology in India across the tumultuous century from 1857 to decolonization in 1947. Conrad and Imperialism is a superbly measured and balanced study of the politics of Conrad's fiction. Where previous criticism, including that of Raymond Williams and even Edward Said in his early study of the writer, had tended to suppress or underplay the political implications of the colonial dimension of Conrad's work, Benita places these at the center of her study. I've often thought that the book is best read in conjunction with Jonah Raskin's The Mythology of Imperialism, recently reissued, I'm glad to be able to note, after having been allowed to lapse into relative obscurity in the 1980s and 1990s. And also Chinua Achebe's powerful essay, An Image of Africa, whose counterposed and overstated positions Benita's book might be said to contest and mediate. No subsequent study of Conrad, not even Said's treatment of the author in his magisterial 1993 work, Culture and Imperialism, has bettered Benita's incisive analysis of the contradictory brilliance of Said's political insight. Important though these two books undeniably are, however, Benita's international renown as a scholar is due less to these two books, important though they are, than to her crusading articles on post-colonial theory, which have appeared over the course of the past quarter century. By far the most influential of her many essays is, in this field is Problems in Current Theories of Colonial Discourse, a groundbreaking essay first published in 1985, in which she offered a devastating critique of the work of Gayatri Spivak and Homi Bhabha, two of the three gatekeepers to the enchanted forest of post-colonial studies. The third is Edward Said himself, about whom Benita will say more in her paper this evening. The broader burden of her essay was to suggest that for all its avant-gardism and professed radicalism, much of the most influential work in post-colonial studies ran counter to the liberationist politics of the great anti-imperialist struggles of the decolonizing era. In the case of Bhabha, no great friend of the left, this was and is perhaps a less shocking charge than in the case of Spivak. But Benita argued bracingly that Spivak's celebrated conceptualization of subalternity in terms of speechlessness or structured inarticulacy had the effect of desensitizing her to the politics of insurgency and resistance everywhere in evidence in the colonial world. Spivak's theory tended, ironically, to represent imperialism as utterly and implacably hegemonic. In her subsequent work, Benita has sharpened and consolidated her considerable reputation as a radical theorist of colonial discourse theory and post-coloniality, a concept that she denies exists. She has written further and tellingly in criticism of both Bhabha and Spivak, contributed authoritatively to the field-defining debate over the status of Ajaz Ahmed's book In Theory, and commented searchingly and astutely on Said's intellectual production. Some of her best essays are collected in Postcolonial Studies, a Materialist Critique, published in 2004. The titles of several of the essays in this volume give a sense of the cut and thrust of her work, of its engagement, criticality, polemical intent, and intellectual commitment. Directions and Dead Ends in Postcolonial Studies, Internationalism Revisited, or In Praise of Internationalism, Liberation Theory, Variations on Themes of Marxism and Modernity. I have always particularly relished the moment early in her essay on resistance theory, Theorizing Resistance, or Two Cheers for Nativism, in which, without actually mentioning the subaltern studies theorists or Gayatri Spivak, Benita quite simply and properly displaces their work to the margins. There is, of course, she writes, note that, of course, There is, of course, abundant evidence of native disaffection and dissent under colonial rule, of contestation and struggle against diverse forms of institutional and ideological domination. Benita's work is not primarily or even preeminently meta-theoretical in thrust and tenor. On the contrary, one could plausibly argue that her most important writings have been those in which she's been concerned to develop new ideas or advance new readings rather than to restrict herself to criticism of dead ends or roads not taken. Her work on national liberation, imperialism and Marxism and the colonial world falls into this category, as do her several pieces on South African culture and politics, and the research she's been doing into world literature alongside several of us in the Warwick Research Collective here at Warwick. She's always been concerned also to sustain and amplify her long-standing research interests in the literatures of imperialism, hence her many essays on Kipling, Conrad, Wells, and Forster. To many of you in this room, here at Warwick, Benita will perhaps be more familiar to you as friend, colleague, mentor, or supervisor. We can gain a sense of her in this personal capacity, it seems to me, by looking quickly at what those who have come to know her well or who have worked closely with her have tended to write about her in the acknowledgements pages of their books. You can learn a lot about the kind of people that intellectuals or academics are by paying attention to what other intellectuals or academics say about them in their acknowledgements. In Benita's case, it's striking that she hardly ever features in a mere listing of names. One rarely sees a sentence of the type, "I would like to thank X, Y, Z, and Benita Parry for reading drafts of this manuscript and for being such excellent colleagues." Instead, she tends to be identified and thanked for having been so open and generous in sharing something incommensurable, like friendship, something qualitative, unique. True, her former doctoral students tend to thank her dutifully for the excellence of her supervision, but they almost always go on to say that what really matters to them is the ongoing nature of the bond that they have forged with her. So in her book on J.M. Coetzee, Jane Poyner thanks Benita for the warmth of her continuing friendship. And Sherry Deckard writes in her book on Paradise Discourse not only that, quote, she could not imagine a warmer or more inspiring supervisor and mentor, but that my life is deeply enriched by her continued friendship. Nor is it only her former students who think of Benita in this way. I've already quoted from the acknowledgements of my own recent book. In her new book, The Postcolonial City and Its Subjects, Rashmi Varma thanks Benita as a powerful source of inspiration and an amazing friend. Laura Chrisman dedicates reading the Imperial Romance to her, writing that she owes an especial debt to Benita Parry, to whom this book is dedicated with love. Her extraordinarily generous and invaluable critical input, scholarship, encouragement, and stimulation have accompanied each stage of this project. Priya Gopal's first book, Literary Radicalism in India, is also dedicated to Benita, quote, without whose wisdom, love, and friendship, I would not have made it to the finishing line. I don't think that there is anyone whose work better embodies the Saidian ethic of secular criticism than Benita, who also brings her fierce, engaged, and unsentimental critical gaze to bear reciprocally upon Said's work, which would probably have made him uncomfortable, which he has long championed and challenged, fought for and contested. Ruthless criticism of everything existing is the old Marxist slogan, and certainly Benita's writing takes no prisoners. But there's a profound ethical sensibility at work in her criticism also, which this particular Marxist slogan doesn't necessarily capture. Perhaps one can get closer to the heart of Benita's work by slightly amending a slogan of Said's own. Never solidarity before criticism, he used to say. Benita's work seems to say something slightly different. Always solidarity and criticism. Which is why I love also what Priya Gopal wrote about Benita in the acknowledgements to her second book, The Indian English Novel. With gratitude to Benita Parry for getting on my case. Please join me in welcoming Benita Parry, whose lecture this evening is entitled What's Left in Postcolonial Studies.
Thank you, Neil. That was moving and overgenerous, but thank you all the same.